Our lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the USCDI Task Force meeting. So let's officially get going with the meeting, and I'll start with the roll call, beginning with your co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
Hello.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning.
Hans Gudendijk.
Good morning.
Grace Cordova.
Close enough. Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry about that. Jim Jarrett. Not here. Kim Kawamoto. John Kilborn.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Clem McDonald. Aaron Mary is going to be late today. Brett Oliver. Mark Savage. Michelle Schreiber is out. And Abby Sears.
Here.
Sasha Terman.
Good morning.
Andrew Truscott. Cheryl Turney. Daniel Freeman. And Denise Webb is out. Okay, Stephen, I'll hand it to you.
Thank you so much. And thank you everyone who was able to join us this morning. Really appreciate your time and attention. I think there are a few people who got pulled away today, so we will take full advantage of those of you who are here. As you can see, we're going to speak a bit about HL7 and the interface between their work and that of the ONC and our task force. So we really appreciate having Wayne Kubik and Brett Marquard here with us. Thank you. My brain had a little misfire there to talk us through some issues. We're then going to jump back into focus on tasks 2, B, and C as we started last time. And I think that will fill out the time. We have, I believe, posted meeting minute notes to the website. Is that true, team? Are we up to date now? Did we get them all up there?
Yes, we're up to date.
Wonderful. We're up to date. I think that's the first time since we kicked off some months back. So very exciting that the machine is now well oiled. So you guys should be able to find those up there. So again, if we can go to the slide 4. Just as a reminder of where we are in our journey, we completed our task 1 work, generating comments and suggestions back to HITAC regarding draft V2. And as you'll all recall, and I'm saying some of this for Wayne and Brett's benefit, that those recommendations were fully embraced by the HITAC unanimously, and then forwarded on to the ONC for consideration. The ONC is now in their period of time where they're evaluating all the public and HITAC feedback regarding V2 and are working on developing the final V2 for publication in a few months. We're now into our task number 2, focusing on the USCDI expansion process, and we've determined that we're going to focus initially on 2, B, and C, the criteria used to assign levels to submitted data classes and elements, and the prioritization process that's used to select from amongst those submitted elements to put into the draft of the subsequent version. So the reason that we're focusing on this is because we have an opportunity to impact the version 3 process. So new documentation will be published by ONC in July along with the final V2 that will then determine how the approach to the next cycle is made with regard to leveling and prioritization. So that's why we're focusing in on this. As part of this, though, you'll recall that in our recommendations to ONC, there were a few specific data elements where we said that these should be included in version 2. This was our recommendation, if and only if the implementation guides and standards supporting them are at a level of completeness that the vendors and the industry as a whole would be prepared and have all the supporting tools to be able to truly and meaningfully exchange that data. So there was a handful of specific data elements that we said that about, including the entire data class of social determinants of health, which, of course, we've spent a lot of time talking about, and others have acknowledged the fundamental importance of getting that data into USCDI and getting it exchanged more broadly. So we thought it was a good opportunity to reach out to our friends at HL7 to understand just what is this interaction between USCDI, between recommendations that our task force or HITECH or ONC that our task force and HITECH will have, what it means to say you can include this or you should include this if HL7 has kind of checked their boxes. So we thought with that, we would invite Wayne and Brett to provide us a bit of a background so that we're all on the same page with regards to the HL7 process. Of course, we are generally dependent on HL7, both in the area of the CCDA standards, as well as the FHIR US core standards. So with that sort of shaky introduction, Brett and Wayne, please enlighten us as to the HL7 process, and then also what that means for the specific recommendations that we've made.
Sure, and thank you all for inviting us here today. We appreciate this opportunity. I'm the HL7 CTO, and I think you're all familiar with Brett, who can introduce himself briefly. We just wanted to have a couple quick overview slides to just help refresh your memories about how the HL7 process works, and specifically the process that had been approved by the U.S. Realm Steering Committee for keeping the U.S. Core the FHIR U.S. Core Implementation Guide well aligned with USCDI, new releases of the USCDI. So if you can go to the next slide, please, I'll do the quick overview. HL7 is a consensus-based standards organization. We are ANSI accredited, the American National Standards Institute, and we conform with the consent rules for consensus-based training that I think is the National Technology Transfer and Advancement Act of 1995. These have basic rules about having openness and balance and ensuring that the community has the right opportunity to be able to participate and advise and consent on the use of standards within their particular industry area. And so this is kind of a quick overview of the overall process of what we do, but our ANSI requirements have basic things in place that we have open meetings that have minutes available conducted under Robert's Rules of Orders. And we have certain types of standards that we develop, but, you know, basically open, transparent, make sure we balance interests among different stakeholder groups, due process and appeals. And the bottom line, the little flowchart at the bottom is an overview of the basic way we conduct standards. We define a project in that first step, creating a project scope statement. There is a process of creating content when a project team works under the auspices of an HL7 work group to produce a specification. We announce the availability of a specification for ballot. This is a 6-week period, so people know a ballot's going to be coming up. They can sort of prepare for it to come. There is a ballot that's proposed that is a 30-day ballot review period where the community gets to provide their comments as well as to vote affirmatively or negatively on the specification for various capabilities. These are held traditionally 3 times a year at HL7 in January, May, and September. There is a period afterwards when we go through all the comments. The work group goes through the comments with the project team and makes decisions on how to the disposition of each of the comments, whether they're relevant to the spec, whether they're things that need to be done or should be done, or versus whether they're things that, can't be approved or can't be processed. And then we publish a specification. So it does take time to do this because all of these steps have time associated with them, certainly the time to develop a spec, but also the time just to, you know, ballot it, announce the ballot, make it available for ballot, and to deal with the comments that came out of the ballot. Next slide, please. Brett, do you want to take the next one?
Sure, happy to. Thank you for having two of us. So I'm Brett Marquardt. I'm currently actually with Mickey moving to the national coordinator, taking over as project manager for Argonaut, and then involved in development of both Consolidated CDA and US Core. And so US Core is the 8-7 implementation guide that most closely maps to US CDI. It's not a perfect map. It's a little bit bigger than US CDI right now. But I kind of joke that we play this game of leapfrog where US CDI jumps over US Core, and then we catch up and add things sometimes, and then we jump over and maybe add some of our own stuff. But this particular slide, it uses internally HL7 as an idea that it's a high bar to get into US Core. The idea is that it's a foundational standard that everybody in HL7 can build on top of. It's not one where we just add new data elements with the hope that folks will adopt it. And so I sometimes call that an aspirational standard, where we hope someday a vendor or a health system will pick up the standard. US Core is meant to reflect the reality on the ground of what folks are actually doing. And so it's a long journey of declaring candidacy, publishing and piloting. So prove out the data element. After you've kind of proven it out through Argonaut, through DaVinci, through some other maybe accelerator or other health system or patient engagement program, then bring it back and propose it to the HL7 US Realm Steering Committee, and then go through that ballot process. So it's intended to be a long process so that we know that folks have actually committed to putting it to code and to production. And of course, ONC and CMS and other folks have the ability to kind of short circuit that process by stamping a law. And in that case, we still need testing. It's not testing and design review, but ultimately that short circuits the process and prior to kind of fast track it to being included in the future version of US Core. On the next slide, you'll see a timeline. It's a bit of a busy slide, but you know, if you were to look away from the slide, I would say our target goal is to ballot US Core every January. And then publish that new release in May. And the idea is, you know, this was developed with US CDI in mind that, we had talked, we kind of went back and forth of when's the best time to do US CDI design. And it's tricky because when ONC publishes the draft in January, a lot of design effort could go into elements that then get pulled in the final or unstable. And so we decided for this first year, we'd wait till it was finalized in the summer, and then we'd start to do design work in the fall with the idea that the January 2022 ballot would include the majority of US CDI version 2 and then ultimately publication. So that gives us a little bit of window to do testing and refinement before it goes in. And it's important, you know, when you look back over time, I think where ONC has been, ONC and HL7 and the community has been most successful is, you know, ONC posted the draft US CDI with provenance and clinical notes, seemingly innocent data classes, but they still took 6 months of kind of design and testing work to get them folded in agreement for the vendors. I didn't say more than 6 months. And through that design and testing, we actually were able to provide feedback to ONC that, you know, author, it's important. It's nice to have the provider, the actual author's name and the information, but a lot of times, you know, there's thousands of providers in the community, and knowing the organization and time are the primary, you know, those are the two absolute key elements, and then it's nice that they can dig into. And then clinical notes, some flexibility in how you access it. So those are things that come out through testing. So I'll pause there, but, you know, testing, pilot work, real example implementation is, you know, what helps create good standards and ultimately deployment to the community.
Well, one more point. which may not be clear just on the cycle that we have at HL7, we have a requirement for fire implementation guides that they go through at least one connectathon prior to balloting. And so I didn't make it clear, the working group meetings are, we do ballots before each working group meeting, but we also do a connectathon before each working group meeting. So talking about the January cycle would mean if we receive the input, the final USCDI V2 in July, we've got a couple months to put together an IG so that we can test some of these elements at the September connectathon in order to get ready for the ballot. And sometimes we have special connectathons just to make sure we meet that requirement.
Great. Well, thank you so much for that presentation. So it's interesting because the task force really, with input from a number of folks who are on the phone now, said include this in USCDI once HL7 has completed its work. And yet what you're saying is that HL7 will complete its work once it's included in USCDI. So we've got a little bit of a chicken and egg problem here in the way we, I think, as a task force have approached this. And obviously, what really needs to happen is that HL7 needs to know what's coming so that it can work on it. But I think what we're going to likely end up seeing is that some of the items that we have prioritized, and just as a reminder, that was discharge medication, SOGI, the MBI, Medicare Beneficiary ID, and the social determinants of health. Those were the four classes or items that we specifically said, this should be included once HL7 is ready. I think, what is it, how do you see that, and maybe you guys can go through those one by one. It's some of those might be ready for V2 because you've already done a lot of the work on it, but some of it, what we may be doing is signaling that you need to do that work in the next cycle, but it's not going to be in V2 for you to then include in the next cycle. It's going to be sort of off on a waiting to come on sort of status, which sounds like it may be a new concept in this dynamic cycle of virtue between ONC and HL7. So maybe you can talk us through that.
Well, first, let's start with the thank you for sending the list over prior to the call. I mean, good news, discharge medications. We looked at it. We contacted a few major vendors, and they say we support this. Pretty small guidance we can add to the current U.S. core that's about to publish. And so I can't promise yet. It's a committee decision, but I'm optimistic we'll be able to add guidance for discharge medications in the May publication. So that's a good one. It has clear definition. People know what it is. We can add it. I think as we start to go down the list with SOGI, MBI, social determinants of health, a lot of times, Stephen, it's how clear are the requirements and how clear is it in clinical care? Like, have people agreed how to capture it and use it? And when things are clear, the standards process coming behind that is pretty good. Like, we can all say, oh, these different sites, these three sites agree that they do it this way and these vendors have implemented it. We can move pretty fast. I think where we get stuck is when someone proposes a data element that, and I'll be careful because you're the experts on, social determinants of health to me is like this huge topic. And I don't know what's the most important one in the next set or if we decide a framework of how we ask these questions. But when there's kind of that initial design that has to happen kind of pre-standards, that's when we get stuck and things go slow. But in my mind, you proposing or the task force or ONC providing a large chunk of data elements I'd say forecasting. I don't know what the correct word is. Like, if you mandate a whole bunch of things that we don't have designed for, that scares me a lot. If you forecast a bunch, say, hey, these are drafts, and encourage the industry to move forward and develop standards to them, and then you see, push folks to pick up a set or all of them, that's where I see things working very positively.
Well, that's very helpful. And I think that was also what we were hearing from Hans, who is certainly one of the members of our task force who's very close to your process. You know, this notion that we should not simply be looking, you know, one cycle ahead, but we should be identifying kind of a roadmap, if you will, of recommendations. So in this case, as you said, discharge medications, that came up in our work. You're saying, you know, that there's a good chance perhaps that that would be ready for formal inclusion in V2, whereas, you know, the other items that we identified as really warranting HL7 support before inclusion, those might potentially be V3 items, but having that specified formally helps you in your process. Did I get that right?
You sure did. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's also important. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Wayne. After you're finished, I have a question.
Oh, I just wanted to make a small comment that the other issue is the scheduling. You know, we've based the chart Brett showed was based on publication in July. And so, you know, we need to basically do our planning based on which of the requirements we feel are mature enough and stable enough and well enough defined that we can actually put in the spec at that point in time. And so the question of when the you release release two has a big impact, because that's where we basically have to lock and say, where are we, what can we really do or not. And so if that schedule changes, well, then we would have to adjust our schedule accordingly. But that's just an important thing to keep in mind. Go ahead, please, Leslie.
Clem, you have your hand up.
Thank you. I have one question before we get to Clem.
Sure.
I really appreciate, Brett, you're talking about the sort of the aspirational versus the day-to-day, and I think that's very helpful for us as we think about sending signals to industry and versus perhaps directives or recommendations, and perhaps we should consider both. So thank you for that clarity. I did have a question. Yesterday I was interviewing the California HIE Association out of Fresno, and they mentioned that the lift for them when data classes were not considered and only data elements were considered, that it was a harder lift, and that sometimes a whole class of data elements was easier. The overhead for extracting, for reporting and such. And I wanted to get both of your opinion about data class versus data element level.
Did they give a specific example, Leslie, that they referred to?
They were talking about mostly the things we use all the time, like provider data, patient demographics, things that are well used. But in the USCDI, we might be more very limited in the total use of every single element. And so they said, look, we're going to have to do this anyway. So
yeah.
I wanted to get your opinions. How do you approach data class versus data element? Does that make a difference in your process?
It probably does a little. I think it's, let's use clinical notes. Like clinical notes, the data class, which we know there's all kinds of different kind of clinical notes underneath there. And so we're able to kind of, I think it's helpful to have a data class with a kind of set of example elements at least to go with it. And so for that one, we could say, all right, we're going to prioritize this set. We could do a design around those set, and then that kind of framework is available for basically any clinical note. So if ONC wants to add more clinical notes, the class is there. It's exposed. Vendors have built functionality to support that. Vital signs, I think ONC has always been very specific to say specific vital signs. I don't know if that was, I guess there's some historical reasons for that. I don't know. I mean, if you were to say send patient demographics as a class and didn't give us any guidance underneath that, I think you might not get what you wanted. And so it definitely needs a little bit of balance.
The other thing that I would imagine is that a data class is sort of never complete, right? I mean, one could always come up with new elements to add to a class. I mean, I think provenance is a perfect one. I mean, in our prior task forces, we talked about all sorts of things that might go under provenance, and I think we will continue to have good ideas in that regard. But I think, yes, having the class there allows us to add more elements to it over time. Okay, we've got a couple questions stacking up. Clem,
yeah,
you want to go?
Can I put just a brief comment in here, just to turn from class to element? When we're talking about US Core, we're talking about profiles that actually go a level deeper than that. So you basically may, in many cases, a class like patient information, patient demographics would match to a fire resource. And the resource mm-hmm. breaks into elements, which will include things like, gender and birth date and elements like that. And then there are terminologies in the profile that are assigned to those. They'll say which of these elements are necessary and which of the value sets would be used to populate these. So it gets down to the very detailed level. So if we're talking about classes, yes, they're easier to do because they'd be much less specific. If your goal is interoperability, people will be able to provide some type of information, but it's very unlikely to be interoperable and consistent. And so that's why you need both a little bit. And as Brett said, examples really help, so we make sure we touch the key points. Sorry, go ahead.
Glenn, do you have a question? Clem?
Mute. Okay, I'm off mute.
There we go.
The question of why be stingy? And there are some things that are packaged in HO7. In V2, it's a segment, and in fire, it's a resource. And I think there was an inclination in some members of the committee to say, let's just ask for the whole resource and maybe not make them all required, but they would be available and systems could deliver them or not. And it would be less work for the committee to wrestle with each of these. And I think that, Wayne, the resource would go with the codes that are assigned to it. I mean, that would be the easiest way to think about it. But also, I had a second issue. So I like Leslie's question. I think it could come to an easier point. But I also don't know. We haven't talked. We did just now talk about the clinical reports and radiology reports, but we didn't mention them as a priority. I hope they are, and I hope they're not going to run into big problems. I mean, V2 has been doing it for 30 years, and it's just one kind of a thing. So what you're thinking about those two, which provide a tremendous value to clinical care. Brett?
And so, sorry, can I clarify the imaging report or which particular? You said there were two.
It was imaging. It wasn't radio. There's imaging report and what was a clinical note, I think, were the two. I forget the exact names, but they were broad categories of narrative reports or what could be narrative. I don't want to get into that twist.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so we did in the last release add some guidance for the generic. And I'm sure Al can, I sometimes get them mixed up in my own mind, but I believe it was imaging report. And as I spit it out of my mouth, I'm looking because I don't want to get being precise here. We did add that in the last cycle. I did, to jump back to that generic class thing, I want to give an example to grab onto. Goals is a USCDI beta class. We have guidance for goals in the specification, but it's really just a resource. So we don't actually say like, these are the types of goals, or here's example goals. We basically say, here's a goal resource, go use LOINC, good luck. And that makes me feel like, so if someone asks me how we do it, I'm like, yeah, we got goals, but it doesn't quite feel like I really understand how people use goals today in clinical care, even though I think they're pretty important.
And the question is,
imaging narrative.
Is HL7 able to absorb those two without starting all over with something? The imaging report and the whatever the other one's called, clinical reports.
Imaging narrative is in there. The additional one I think could be absorbed pretty cleanly.
Okay, all right, that's good to know. And I have one more comment on the social determinants of health. So about 5 months ago, maybe a little longer, I saw the list. There was a list of discrete questions, maybe 20, I don't know, maybe more. And I could see that could be easily absorbed. Now, the last time I saw it, it deals with maybe 6 or 8 or 10 resources, some of which aren't really well established in current use, in terms of, and it could be burdensome in terms of data collection. So I don't know when that shifted, but that makes it more complicated, I would think, than just saying, here, we got to ask these 20 questions on every patient that comes in. I mean, I guess I'm talking to Leslie, too, as well as you guys.
So I think there is a question about what information is already collected and what would be new, and who does the collection. I do think that is there are some valid questions there, and so FDOH has some workflow to still work out. I would agree with that. The part of setting some aspirational goals is setting a signal that says this is important to care and this is important to ongoing population health. And therefore, although we hadn't done this in the past, it's not a traditional collection, it is something that will inform our ability to co-produce health and to operate better in value-based care. So I think this is an area where we have aspirational goals. We don't yet have the workflow. There has been a lot of work being done in the data collection or in the data definitions, but there's more work to be done. It is, I think there are clear signals everywhere in the industry that this is important. And so, but I do acknowledge there is work to do and appreciate the work being done so far in the Gravity Project and beyond.
Yeah, and before we go on, actually, we've got a couple of questions stacked up, but I wanna just pursue that a little bit further. So I think, Leslie, you raised a really important topic that we should understand before we let these nice gentlemen go. So social determinants of health, obviously, tremendous amount of work has been done over the past few years on that, in connectathons, et cetera. And the Gravity Project team submitted a whole host of SDOH data elements to the OnDeck system. And five of them in particular, ONC leveled as level two. And our understanding has been that once it makes it to level two, that ONC believes that it's technically ready to be included in US CDI. And then they chose amongst the level two elements to come up with the draft V2, and presumably will be choosing amongst those to come up with the final V2. So it surprises me to hear that HL7 then turns around and says, no, SDOH really isn't ready. You know, that not enough work has been done. And it just makes me wonder, how did it make it into level two if it's not actually ready to be included in the next version? What is actually missing? Because, again, it was just five of a much longer list of SDOH data elements that were, you know, I think there's like another 20 that are sitting over at the comment level. But five of these made it to level two, assessment, goals, interventions, outcomes, problems/health concerns. And my impression was that meant that if ONC included them, that they'd be ready to go. So from the HL7 perspective, if ONC did include those five, you know, at the suggestion of our task force and now HITACH, what would you guys do? I mean, would you have them? Is there even a way humanly possible to get those ready in time for V2? Or would you say, no, sorry, we have to wait and do those in time for V3?
So I think there's, you know, ready to create a standard and ready for the real world use of them. So like problems, we already have guidance on problems. We already have a guidance on assessment. We already have guidance on goals. I don't know how those are used. Like when I go see my doctor, we don't do goals together and I don't see that exchange in any manner, but I agree. It's an important thing. I'm sure we can add fields for intervention and outcomes, or we can come up with some way. But to me, it's a broader question of like, you know, is this prepared to be used in clinical care? And are folks starting to use this? And if we create this, creating the standard doesn't deploy it out there. I mean, you all know that, you know this. So Stephen, I'm not sure. I mean, on interventions and outcomes, I don't think we have good, at least today, for sure in US Core, we don't have good guidance. Maybe there's some in Gravity we could pull in, but I guess this is where I would look to the EHR vendors and other community folks to see, like, maybe the folks already have a lot of experience with this that I'm unaware of, that would make it easier to add.
This is back to the chicken and egg, you know, regulatory chicken and standards egg, or vice versa. Because if we do, as a nation of policy, say that these things are important for maintaining health of our citizenry, there's an obligation for then policy to be developed to monitor, assess, gather these things. So we now have a great work being done with Gravity and others but there's some gaps. So I think waiting for the chicken and the egg to be cloned isn't going to work. Sometimes we're starting with the chicken and sometimes we're starting with the egg.
Sure.
And yep. I think we have the best that we can do. So we've got lots of questions, Jim, and then Grace, Clem, and Abby.
Actually, I think Wayne's trying to get a word in.
Well, yeah,
sorry.
Briefly. We're very sensitive to that. And so, but the idea is that, you know, we can sort of meet partway on some of these things. Like, for example, you know, as Brett said, there are buckets to put things, I think, except for outcome. I don't know where we put outcome right now. But we have buckets to put things. What we may not have are sufficient, you know, value sets defined in controlled terminologies, and we may not have examples. And so in some cases, for example, the problems, health concerns, that fits pretty well. We don't really have a huge problem, and we can do that, and we can put a stake in the ground that there is now a social determinants of health component of US CDI. The other elements, they're a little more problematic. And, you know, if we don't have the clear requirements, we can't really profile down to the deepest level. But, you know, there are fire resources in most cases that people can use, and over time we add additional constraints and, you know, additional specificity in order to be more interoperable. Can't say that.
I think we need to take the questions. We've been doing a lot of talking, and we want to bring in the task force members. So I think we'll go to Jim, and then Abby, I think your hand was up earlier and came down and went back up again. So we'll start there, and then we've got everyone else teed up. Jim?
Okay. Hey, it's Jim. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, hey, I think I heard you say that sometimes it's easy to add things. Like, for example, if we wanted to add additional note types. And I wanted to validate that because, you know, with full EHI coming in a couple of years, there's a few note types that, to Clem's point, would be highly valuable clinically. And I'm just curious if that's sort of a low-hanging fruit add-on. For example, operative reports are in high demand, and I'm not sure they were articulated in the standard summary level, advanced directives, discharge orders, you know, functional status, you know, wound. So there, in the notes category, is it easier to extend, or is that a challenge for HL7 if that would entered into the next version?
I would say yes, it is. The kind of design framework for notes is fairly clear. I think what's tricky is some of the things that you mentioned, advanced directives, functional status, those to me sometimes go beyond just notes. There's actually functional status has clinical observation components, and that's where it gets very complex, which I say, whoa, not quite a note. And then I'm not the expert. I look to the clinical folks of what are you capturing today? Do your system support this? Before I could say absolutely.
Okay, gotcha. So clear note categories may be easier. Some of the other things I mentioned obviously go beyond.
Yeah, like beyond a new narrative operative value. Note, like I think would be pretty straightforward for folks to absorb.
Abby, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, I want to circle back to the social determinants of. I understand a little bit better now the process and the. You know, the thinking that goes through with this. I'm just, when you're in the field and you're in the different states, the states are beginning to require this data to be captured. So I'm just, when you're in the field and you're having to capture this data and the standards and our work at our level has not finished or culminated, we're caught in a catch-22, so I hear what everyone is saying, but every state is now then requiring different data to be captured. So is there a way to speed up the process? And the reason I say that is it's expensive to do this in a lot of different ways in every different state. And I understand that we have our process and it's very methodical that we need to go through, but in the field, when you're in the field and we're talking about capturing the data, we are capturing the data. The data have been getting captured for many years. We have 700,000 individual screenings from different patients. So we understand what that workflow is. We are pretty adept at it. But when I go into different states, they're requiring different data elements, and that is incredibly expensive and inefficient as a country. So how do we collectively find a pathway that can speed up this process? Because we can't afford another 10 years waiting for, and I'm not saying that you're saying that, I'm just saying they're forcing this conversation regardless of if we are ready. So what could we do collectively and together I don't like the word speed up because it feels pejorative, but to make this easier to get through this process so that we can get some level of standards and give these states something to work with so that they can decide to stop designing it in a different way in the absence of us getting done with our work.
Yeah, Abby, I think you make a really good point, and we certainly saw this so much in the context of the pandemic, where everyone's sort of trying to do good, but they're kind of going in somewhat different directions. And one of the things that I think USCDI can do for our country is to help to channel that energy and enthusiasm. And I think, you know, what Wayne and Brett said was, you know, there's probably some things within the data class of social determinants that could potentially be moved forward, you know, in the context of V2, you know, and they mentioned, you know, problems and potentially goals as things that perhaps have enough structure around them within what was submitted that they could be included. And I frankly personally think it would be very helpful for V2 to include the class of social determinants and whatever we could include in there, because then it would give the community something to hang on to. It's like, oh, thank goodness, we're doing social determinants, and look, these two or these three have now been included in USCDI, so let's all get around those, and then progressively add additional elements in version 3, version 4, et cetera, as those make it through the process. But I think, you know, sociopolitically, you know, and practically, we need to go there. And the question is, how can we do it safely and meaningfully within the context of this next cycle?
I also, if I could just add one more thing, Stephen, I love the way you framed that. Thank you for that. I also think we're working with an administration that is going to expedite the process of the equity issues that are being experienced across the country. In fact, almost every executive order has some element of that is actually being executed upon. So how do we maybe pivot and again, make sure that we are prioritizing the same things that this particular administration is asking to be prioritized, and making sure that that is at the front of our mind as we begin to do this, because the equity issues experienced by the patients have been going on for years and years and years, and we have an opportunity in a short period of time, because we have a very receptive administration, to really drive through these equity issues as quickly as we can. So I just want to make a compelling case to maybe change the prioritization or reinforce a higher level prioritization for this, because of the amount of equity issues that the at-risk patient population have been experiencing for so many years.
Thanks so much, Abby. Yeah. Grace, do you want to chime in?
Yes, I want to tie into that last comment and the comments before. So first, I want to thank Brett for presenting the roadmap, because that was extremely helpful in understanding the amount of time that needs to be invested to develop these things. My concern from the patient and care partner perspective, when I look at the task force mission here, especially 2B and 2C, when we look at the idea of significant gaps in USCDI, there is a conflict that I'm seeing from the patient and care partner perspective with level 2 data elements and the need to have these technical standards. I would like to ask if we could consider, if there are major gaps from the patient and care partner perspective, which is the stakeholder that is the most data underserved when we look at the healthcare ecosystem on data access. Patients in general are data underserved stakeholders. Should we actually prioritize high use case elements that don't have standards so that we don't leave everything that is important that doesn't have a standard for the very end? Because a lot of these things that are important to the patient and care partner perspective in use cases may not have standards that are mature, and I'm concerned that we're going to be pushing all of them off to the very end, and then it's going to be a scramble, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, Grace, you raise a really key point, and one that I think we will continue to talk about here in the task force, which is that is it appropriate for us to recommend, for HITECH to recommend, for ONC to consider putting things into USCDI that really don't have full support from a technical perspective? You know, that sort of switches it to this aspirational goal that Brett was describing earlier. And I think that what we heard from HL7, and I'll ask Brett or Wayne to kind of chime in, what would it mean to you, you know, from your perspective, if suddenly ONC put something into USCDI that really wasn't baked, you know, that didn't have standards because, you know, we just thought it was so, you know, there's a part of USCDI that's really standards-based, technically supported. There's this other part that's more aspirational. How would you see that working out in real life, Brett?
I mean, I think what's interesting is in the standards world, we kind of, I like to joke sometimes that standards and HL7, and I don't mean this in an offensive way because I spent a lot of time there, it's like Disneyland. Like, we're in standards land and we can create our own little amusement park. And it's beautiful and it's fun and we love the ride, but they don't necessarily work when they go out into like the, you know, and it rains outside or the real environment. And so what I get concerned about is USCDI does something very sorry, first off, I like the idea of USCDI being aspirational in the draft and really pushing people to go, go, go. But when you finalize something as an aspirational thing, we develop a standard to go with it because we're, you know, trying to work together. It seems like it's done and we feel good about it. But if it hasn't gone out to the broader industry, folks say, oh, we solved goals. We got goals in the US core, but it's not quite rolled out to the broader community. And so it feels good that it's done, but it hasn't kind of permeated out into clinical care and improved patients' lives. And so that's where I get nervous.
And I don't know if we've lost Wayne or if he just went off camera.
I don't know if did that make sense, Stephen?
Yeah, it did. But I was going to comment a little further, Stephen.
Yeah, go ahead.
Being that I'm very supportive of the aspirational approach. I think within the HL7 community, we respond very quickly when we know it's very important and likely to be in regulation. I think it's important, though, to differentiate between, and again, USCDI already has different categories of components in terms of candidates and things. Well, we need to differentiate between the stuff that's ready to go for standard and the stuff that's going to take longer to develop. We still need to prioritize those. If SDOH is a high priority, and we think it is, it's just going to take longer than the time we have in the cycle to get it ready. But we want people to focus their attention on working on it so they get there closer. So I think we need to, you know, I think it would be very helpful if HITECH did both, saying, you know, these are the things that are ready to go into the specification. We stick to our schedule. These are the next round of things that we really want you to get, and you tell us when you can get it in there and get back to us, because that helps motivate the community, that helps get people prioritized, helps the vendors pay attention, and we want to make those things very clear, but it's not something that we have to delay our schedules and not get some of the value out there sooner. And so, you know, I think that's what happened with the package you sent us. Let's do what we can. Let's get as much into it as we can for the next release. And let's focus attention on getting the rest of it ready so it will be going in there as soon as possible, even if we can't make the deadline.
So I guess what I would ask is, I'd ask Al perhaps to comment from the ONC perspective, beyond the task force and HITECH publishing recommendations or posting those. It seems like you would probably be looking to ONC to create some vehicle for saying these are the things that we have teed up for to likely include in V3. You know, not waiting until next winter when draft V3 comes out, but giving you guys a chance to see, like, these are things that are, you know, we really want to see prioritized for V3, so you guys can work on them this year and get them, see how far you can get them down the path even before they might be included in a draft V3 in early 2022. Is that fair? And Al, if so, how would you see ONC perhaps responding to that?
So I think that's fair. We do have conversations. We have had conversations with HL7, Brett in particular, on things that we were considering for adding to the draft before we published the draft. And we expect that sort of thing to continue. We have that sense. I think to Grace's comment, there could be things that are not fully baked, fully developed standards-wise. But we have a sense both, you know, of our own, you know, based on our own experience and in coordination with HL7, that something like this could be feasible, and it's an aspirational goal of ONC's to advance into a certain area. So, you know, we made that push around clinical notes. It was aspirational for us to add the narrative components. We had the aspiration to add provenance as well, and so those did not that we didn't come up with that idea in vacuum. We knew what the input was going to be. We had a sense as to what the initial feedback was going to be from HL7. We didn't make it necessarily easy for them, but at least they had a heads up that it was coming instead of waiting until the draft.
That's helpful, Al. Stephen, it looks like we still have Hans and Cheryl also, and Clem again. Hans?
Thank you. I really appreciate the discussion. I want to highlight a couple of things in there that notion, and Al talked about some of the topics that have been raised earlier. But doing that in a roadmap format, that is really very helpful. And it's not only a roadmap that is shared and discussed with the standards organization that is trying to do it, but as Brett identified, there is more than that because it needs to be implemented. How does the community get awareness of that so that we collectively work on that? I think in the process that, and we talked a little bit about it before as well, USCDI has been focusing on what are the classes, what are the elements, and what is the vocabulary standards. The term standards is used, but it's really meant to be vocabulary. And the point that Brad was making is an important one that is once it then moves on and you look at it from a standards overall perspective, there's more than that because we need to agree to how is it being communicated, particularly in FHIR US Core and CCDA. And they have different, for different elements, they have different constructs, different approaches to do that we do not all yet agree to what the right thing is because different systems manage it differently, but we need to come to an agreement in the middle. So yes, the standards are there, but the guidance is not there because Brett and myself, and actually we have figured that out over a number of years as well, we might end up with a different way of doing it, both valid, but not interoperable. And we need to come to a conclusion to that. So I think that roadmap, recognizing that it's not only about vocabulary standards, but that it's the guidance on the base of the existing standards, that's really critical to get a good timeline in place that is not one here, one there, but it's a reasonable roadmap. It's not perfect, but it's something that we can collectively work to. So that's what I think from an ask to ONC and an ask to the community of which we are also part is that how can we work on that to really make that happen so that we have good insight, good foresight, and that everybody has the opportunity to get their piece in place in a timely fashion and not get surprised that, oops, we need to do something in state X by 2 months from now.
That's a great comment, Hans, and it really, I think, speaks to where I think we're going to end up settling is this concept of a roadmap, something that goes beyond just, you know, what's in V2 and then waiting for draft V3, but some sort of public statement from ONC of what we're hoping to be able to get into V3 and or future versions to signal that to the, as you say, to the entire industry. Clem, your hand is back up. Cheryl, I know you've been putting. Oh, you got a drop. I'm sorry. Okay. Too bad.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be controversial. I think we're doing this all wrong. Firstly, the question of these, there was questions being asked in all the states to answer things about social determinants of health, and they're actionable. You know, do you have a place to live? Do you have money? Do you have this? Do you have that? They're doing it. There's a thing called PREPARE that's one of the surveys used. And we could do that tomorrow if we got together, but we're medicalizing it by putting it into goals and problems and all this stuff. A lot of this is done in social services. It's not necessarily even the healthcare system. So I think it's all wrong. We could do it simply. We should do the rest too, but I don't think it's necessary. You got 30, 40 questions. Gravity did it 5 months ago. Maybe they've changed. That's okay. If we just clam down on those, it's not hard. And we declare these are the ones to be used, and they wouldn't necessarily be in medical systems because a lot of this is done elsewhere.
Thanks, Clem. And I think that's really what Cheryl was getting at in her, you know, she was trying to raise the same issue, and she put it into the public chat that there were standards specified by Gravity and submitted with the data elements that made it into level two. So I guess I'm still a little unclear. What is the remaining gap from the HL7 perspective for those elements, did ONC just see it differently than HL7 sees it?
I think they've confused it by throwing into all those resources. You get goals, you get concerns. What the hell is a concern? As a physician, I don't know what's a concern, what's a problem. You know, if the patient says I can't walk, I'm concerned about it. Well, that's a damn problem. I mean, so we ought to just get the set of questions, get agreement on the set of questions, and put them there, and they got to be collected in whatever circumstances. Grace, you're smiling. I don't know what you're...
I'm in full agreement.
Okay. Well, so again, I really appreciate the time that Brett and Wayne have dedicated. I think we told them we were not going to keep them all day. Gentlemen, do you guys have anything else you want to share before we let you go?
No, thank you for reaching out. I think the idea of don't be afraid to be a little bit aspirational. I think it's a healthy thing that I would encourage. So thank you for having us.
Hey, Brett, I love your analogy. I love the perfect analogy.
Which one?
Disney World.
Disney World.
Standards world.
Just a couple. One last comment. You know, again, I also support the aspirational roadmap approach. I think that will be very healthy. In terms of things like social, one of the things I said in my email is that we need to check more closely with the project teams. For example, Gravity hasn't published or validated anything. And so, you know, to the extent of, you know, it's in the HL7 world, until you get to gather the systematic feedback through the ballot, you know, it's hard to actually say it's ready. So we need to see how close they are. And we certainly, again, want to support as much as we can. But, you know, I know they've been meeting for a long time. Just, you know, don't have any standards yet. And so the state of them is the question we have to look into.
The questions all have long codes already. That's why I...
Well, that's good. I didn't know that, but my point was that we need to look further. That was the same with SOGI as well. There was a gender harmonization informative document that was balloted, but still being reconciled. And again, if the team feels they've got enough ready to go, you know, that was something we didn't do in the time frame we had to answer the question. So we still need to follow up with them. And Stephen, we'll share with you what we hear about those two. We need to dig a little deeper. I think the other one was the MBI versus coverage. Yeah, is the other one with questions.
Wayne, another thing, this is Leslie again, is just when there are aspirational goals, sometimes there are not aspirational sponsors, especially when it's data underserved. Get us through those connect-a-thons, to get us through those processes. So any suggestions you might have when the data underserved are being addressed through HL7 to help accelerate process or even just include in process could be helpful. Do you have any words of wisdom before you drop off?
It is a very important goal that we are trying to move forward as much as we can. It's just it is a complex situation, but yeah, we're sensitive to that. We're always looking for other ways to make it better. So appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Thank you both for your time. We'll bring back additional information to the task force as we hear back from HL7. All right, good. So we're going to go on. Let's see, we're already up to 34 after. So we've got just a bit of time here yet to go. We here in our slide deck are reminded of the current leveling criteria that ONC has used in the past. And recall, this is our opportunity within our task 2B would be to make suggested changes in this process. One thing that we heard last time was a suggestion from Hans in that level 2 maturity current standards, the upper right-hand box, Hans proposed at one point that or might be an and. Which would really sort of raise the bar in terms of getting things into level 2, must be represented using a terminology standard and element of SDO balloted technical specifications. So we're going to want to come back to that. We haven't heard any other concrete suggestions on the leveling process. But I know that there is, you know, a general thread of our discussion, which is saying, you know, if indeed items to be included in a draft or in the next version must be at level 2, that perhaps we should modify what it takes to get into level 2. I think what we just heard out of this last discussion is that perhaps there's something else, you know, that there is. There's level 2. It requires technical standards that really should be included before something truly goes into USCDI itself. But that there's another category. There's the aspirational goals. There's the things that we want to be next, so that we can help to orient the community as a whole. That these are the things you should be working on even before they go in to USCDI, so that they can get into USCDI. And I think we're going to need to look to Al and the ONC team to provide us with guidance as to really what can be, how can we be most helpful. I think we all understand what we want. We want to accelerate change. We want to bring things in that aren't quite up to this technical standard. But whether the way to do that is to just stick them in USCDI and see if that works out, or whether it is to have this USCDI launch pad somewhere else in the public eye beyond just discussions with HL7, I think that's probably where we're starting to go. So I'll just pause there and see if anybody has any thoughts about this whole question about leveling and the leveling criteria. Should we be digging into this and trying to lower the bar, raise the bar, or do we feel like this is kind of already at a reasonable Goldilocks level, not too hot, not too cold, and we can perhaps leave this as is? Curious. Hans, your hands up.
On that question, is that some thoughts is that with the level 1 and level 2 in principle, it seems like that we have the opportunity to do that with some adjustment, that if level 1 were to be as it is an or, there's something there, but it has more prioritization. Can we think more about what is in that list more important and therefore creates the target for the community to make progress in? And that level 2 is then truly be, and that would then be an end, to say is that everything has happened that needs to happen to make it in USCDI so that it can be picked up by the respective programs without much extra work, so that it's not a scramble to catch up with USCDI version next, but that everything is in place. So I think with the level 1 and 2, with the right adjustments, and in at least level 1, a sense of prioritization, we might be able to get there fairly easily.
Grace?
My only comment is, from my experience, some things were suggested from the patient perspective that currently were not in level 2 and then were deemed out of scope. Is there a way, my hope and dream is that more patients and care partners become involved in the task force and in this public process, where we will be uncovering in the future more gaps that perhaps were not submitted previously. Is there a way to not make that level two a mandatory sticking point and make concessions like we have now, where we have COVID-19 and a pandemic? There may have been things that are suggested now that we didn't foresee the 9 months or year prior.
Yeah, I think the challenge that we keep coming up against is, you know, there, you know, whether we're talking about patients or payers or public health, I mean, any stakeholder can have a data element that they're very enthusiastic about. But unless it's ready to be meaningfully exchanged, it's not clear what it means to stick it into US CDI. I think Wayne put it pretty well. Both Wayne and Brett were very enthusiastic about supporting the aspirational nature of this, and making clear that there are things that are a high priority to ONC and to the community. But it's still not clear to me that the way to respond to those aspirations is to stick something into USCDI in a formal published version. And I think, again, we're going to keep coming back to this and until we come to some sort of consensus, or just ONC, you know, makes the decision for us. Curious, Al, what's your thinking on this, you know, based on the current state of our discussion?
So to consider something either as a level two when it doesn't meet the criteria that either these criteria, the modification of the criteria, doesn't, I mean, that's something that, you know, if the recommendation is to modify the prioritization criteria to extend beyond level two data elements, that's something, I mean, that's a recommendation that the task force can make. What it does is, because of the reasons why something is a level one data element, that adds to the development burden, it adds to the implementation burden, it adds to the standards development work, whether it's with a particular FHIR IG or a particular template, the template IGs for CCDA. That's still part of it. It could be a great idea. It could meet the needs of a particular group. But we have to consider it in whole. We have to consider a particular data element, whether it's level one or level two, in whole, with respect to, can this be implemented? And if we add something just to show our support, but it's not mature enough and really can't be implemented for various reasons, then we're not helping anybody advance that particular data element, because nobody will be able to do it. If nobody can do it, then nobody will do it.
Right, right. So there again, task 2B is about the leveling, and task 2C is about the prioritization. How to select items from level two for promotion into USCDI. And so a number of us have thrown some spaghetti at this wall, and this is just meant to be a place to start this discussion. Is there a way that we could craft a set of suggestions around the prioritization criteria, task 2C, that would capture what we've been at here, what we're talking about? And I took a brief stab at this. A number of people have. I mean, it's not so much the words here as the ideas, but the idea that to make it into a draft version or a final version of USCDI, you know, you would meet the top five bullets as we have discussed them, and ONC has utilized them for this cycle. And then that or, it could be an and, it could be an or, I don't know what it, we need to think this through. But there are other identified priority needs, you know, and we've talked about equity. We've talked about data underserved. We've talked about priority use cases. How would this work? Would we say that there are kind of two different classes of citizens within USCDI? There are those that are kind of truly fully baked and ready to go, and then there's others that are aspirational, or do we suggest to ONC that they hold back the aspirationals and like put an asterisk on them? I think one of the challenges, Hans, with your proposal that, you know, that the stuff in level two is really fully baked and the stuff in level one is aspirational, is that there's just too many things. You know, it's too hard, I think, for the industry to look at everything that's now at level one and say, okay, these are things we have to focus on this because it's just too unfocused. I think we need to somehow put an asterisk on the things in level one, if that's where they belong, that are not fully baked, and say these are the ones that ONC, the HITAC, you know, the community through public comment have said, you know, have the greatest support.
I completely agreed with that. That was part of my comment, that it needs to be prioritized, otherwise it won't work. Completely agreed.
And Stephen, I would just add that some of the use cases that we talked about in the pandemic response, you know, it might go from level one to level two to in USCDI overnight because there's a need. Like vaccination, proof of vaccination, and other issues. So it sounds like we have the need to, in the first task, to how do we make sure our levels are correct? And then once the levels are correct, what are the criteria for prioritization? And then allowing for the kind of the one and done, you know, we know how to do notes, let's do more of them. And then the priority of the what we have here is the or. And then maybe that third category is the priority use case for public health. So it's aspirational public health demand and the current prioritization. That's what I'm hearing anyway.
Now, Al, what do you think about this asterisk idea, this idea of identifying elements? I mean, if we say level two theoretically should be, or it is now in the ONC's judgment, those items that are technically ready. I mean, it sounds like there's still some back and forth that needs to happen between ONC and HL7 to see if there's agreement that they're technically ready. But your assessment was that everything you put into level two was technically ready to go. And that level one are the things that need more work. What could ONC do to essentially create an asterisk on the level one data elements to say these are the ones that we really want the industry to focus on?
I think that we could either through whether it's through an asterisk. I think that this asterisk thought could apply to any of the levels if it mm-hmm. was that we wanted. That we thought had value but wasn't ready. And that could apply to level two data elements as well. There could be some things that are in level two that are just too difficult to get, too complex, too abstract, even though somebody's figured out a way to make a standard or an IG on them. So we can do that through communicating what our priorities are in general. We have, new administration, we have some new guidance, we have, as our national coordinator, gets out there to communicate his message about what our priorities are, there's a piece of that communication that includes, and the data elements that are being proposed, they're level one, use some work, and we can highlight that aspect in our communication. I think that could be a way to do it. I don't know specifically how much value there is in adding an asterisk without coming up with a very comprehensive key to what all the indicators are. But we can communicate what those would be important or are important that aren't ready yet, through a couple different ways of communicating.
That's really good to hear. And I think it starts to get at this, you know, the red text on the slide we're looking at. You know, how do we manifest these aspirations? How do we communicate them? So that's great. Other thoughts? Jim, you just popped your hand up.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I was just curious about, I know it'd be different for aspirational versus things that are more ready in data level two, but what about a system where we ranked everything, you know, according to the way we had planned, but had a weighted prioritization list where, you know, items in each of the categories, level one and two, were weighted differently depending on whether they had one of the three items in red, whether they address those priority items.
Yeah, and I think that's what Mark unfortunately had a conflicting meeting today, so couldn't be here. But he presented a very elegant and quite comprehensive weighting methodology that a prior ONC work group had come up with, and we talked through that last time. And I think that, you know, very very impressive. Perhaps too complex for this task. I mean, it was designed for a slightly different task, but it sort of gets at these different issues. You know, that's a lot of work to put something like that together. You know, the number, you know, who does the weighting, you know, what is each criteria worth, et cetera. I mean, it may be a lot. I mean, clearly that's one end of the spectrum. At the other end is just sort of the short list of concepts: equity, data underserved, priority, you know, public health. What do people think? You know, what should we focus on in terms of a deliverable if we wanted to actually put our work into coming up with something like that?
Maybe it applies more to the aspirational bit you know, weighting things like this, a simple weighting system that if they qualify for one of these three items, that it didn't have to be real
Come
complex,
on in.
But instead...
I'm just trying to log
Denise,
in.
Denise, go on mute. Denise. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, that's why I was, you know, coming up with this very simplistic idea of an asterisk. You know, because, you know, it could be one asterisk, two asterisks, three asterisks. I mean, there's all sorts of ways we could do this, right? You know, a complex weighting system, as I say, is at one end of the spectrum. But I think we all are agreeing that there is a need to highlight certain classes or elements. That, yeah, and I love your point, Al, that, you know, this could be true in level two, level one, or comment. You know, that at each level there could be things that are particularly, you know, that ONC wants to call out to the community as particularly important. And I think Wayne and Brett both said that they would welcome that. You know, they want, they know that they have a finite pipeline, right, a finite capacity. And if we can identify things that need doing. Again, I'm still a little confused about the whole level two issue because I thought that level two meant that it was ready. And now HL7 is saying, no, not quite. And I think that we, you know, we'll go to public comment soon, but I think, you know, Clem's point and Cheryl's point, you know, the stuff that, and I'm sorry Mark's not here to speak to it, but I think other people on the call may be involved in Gravity. The stuff that Gravity put forward that made it into level two, I mean, it's all got, you know, technical standards. You know, they call out what they are recommending in terms of applicable standards. I mean, it goes on for a page, you know, the applicable standards, you know, under interventions. So what I heard from Wayne at the end was they're still kind of looking into this, that they, you know, now that we have pointed at these, that they are having some internal meetings or meetings with perhaps vendors. I don't know, Hans, if you or Sasha can comment on this, to see whether, you know, this the standard specifications that they submitted and that ONC felt was sufficient for level two, whether that was, you know, truly ready to the point that perhaps they could support and embrace the five elements that we and ONC suggested to bring forward into V2 or perhaps V3. Clem, you want to get a word in before we go to public comment?
Yeah, just to repeat that we could make progress if we forgot about the big reach, the dealing with resources, which are ill-defined about, we already have problems. So what is going to be different for social determinants of health? Get the darn questions that they define specifically as a part of like a survey instrument, which I think they built. We could tweak it, whatever, but that will be easy. And it also is applied, it's not a medical model always. Half the time, most of the time it's not. So we got it all defined in terms of you're in the hospital, you're going to do these resources with fire. Well, just answer these damn questions and we can take actions. We can actually, there's steps you can do. North Carolina is doing it with Prepare, one of those surveys. But, and we shouldn't have 52 different surveys.
Thanks. Hold that thought, Hans. Let's go to public comment.
Hey, operator, can you open the line for public comment?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Thank you so much. Okay, Hans, you want to chime in?
Sure. In reaction to your question on the readiness, and it's somewhat of a repeat of what we stated before, but if you look at SDOH, and they point to things, they in the long list are vocabulary, which is clearly has been established. Then it points to there's a structural standards that exist, and the underlying fire standard has the resources by which you can express it. It's the implementation guide where there is then the further agreement which attributes on each of these observations or assertions or conditions or otherwise, what needs to be present, what needs to be there, et cetera. That's the implementation guide that Gravity has been working on. That has been balloted. It has not been published yet. So that's where the comments are coming from. It is not. It has not gone through the standards process. So it is standards underlying, yes, guidance not complete. So that just want to make sure that it's clear, that's where it sits. How much time it still takes is a fair question. But if you say is it ready today, if UCDI version 2 is published today, it cannot point to an actual implementation guide that enables everybody to do it consistently. That's the challenge. That's what we're trying to get ahead of as soon as possible.
So I guess I would ask Al to maybe provide us with the final word on this. The chicken and egg problem. where does HL7 need to be for you to include a data element in V2 in July? And let's use SDOH as the example because we're all so enthusiastic about it. Those five data elements that you put in to level two that we suggested be included in V2, but that are not yet a balloted HL7 IG, do you feel that you could include those in V2, with enough public support, or do you feel that the chicken's not ready to be born because the egg is still incubating?
I think that we'd need to have some additional conversation about the feasibility of getting the U.S. Corps and CCDA guides updated in time or close to in time. You know, they don't have to be, I don't think they have to be fully published by January of next year. But if there's a glide path towards, if there's a reasonable glide path towards doing that, and as they said today, if we lead, if USCDI leads, they will have to respond. And if they can't respond, if it's not feasible for them to respond in time, then it's not feasible to put it into version two. But we would need to have some more conversations about that. And then to see how that the proposal to add SDOH to version two fits into our existing prioritization criteria as well.
That's very helpful, and I think a great way to close us out today. I recall that Wayne said at the end that they are in process digging deeper into SOGI, MBI, and SDOH. So I think of the four that we brought forward, acknowledging that SDOH includes five different specific elements, I think that there's still some hope, perhaps, that they would be includable in V2. And that those discussions are ongoing. So let's call it there. We are at the hour. Thank you all for a lively discussion. I again encourage all of you to think deeply and come with specific suggestions for our consideration, and we will see you all next week.